You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Moria. Leafs Nation loves you. One more time, let's hear it for the great Borya Salming.
Welcome into another episode of Leafs Talk Forever. This one is going to be titled and dedicated to Borya Salming. Glad to be back with you. We got Scott and Kyle back. Unfortunately, as you've probably seen by our Twitter account, we did have an episode recorded last Thursday on what day was that? The 17th. However, we had bad audio issues, so we're going to be doing the week previous and this week's together, and then join back with you next Thursday. So it's going to be an action-packed one, but only for an hour because we have a Leafs game at 7:30 tonight against the Islanders. Scott, last week when we did the initial taping, I kind of botched the Borya Salming because it was awkward for me to talk about. So maybe you want to take it. You might be better at the words. Just talk about a little bit in the ceremony.
Yeah. So, two weekends ago, Toronto did. Sorry?
The 12th weekend?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, not the one that just passed, the one before. Toronto did a kind of like a dual ceremony honoring not only Borya Salming, but also the Hall of Famers who are being inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame. So the Friday game, they did both Borya Salming, where they brought him out and had the fans cheer for him and kind of honored him to go along with the Hall of Famers who were there. And it was like a special moment for him. And then the next night on Saturday, they did just a Borya Salming, where they did a tribute video of his career in Toronto and his life after, where he kind of helped the team and mentored the Swedish players who have played on the team since he's retired and since he's been involved in the game of hockey. And then they brought him back out with his family, and they gave him another standing ovation after that. And there was, like, a Leafs alumni were there, like Daryl Sittler, Tiger Williams. It was like a special night honoring him because it was his reported last time that he'll ever be able to come to North America with his declining health based on his ALS diagnosis.
Yeah, and as we had mentioned last time, and numerous people have mentioned, usually Toronto doesn't get these ceremonies right, so to see them actually do well and actually honor him for two nights, but one night all alone with his family is kind of special to see. But since then, he's obviously returned home, and I don't think that there's a treatment plan that he can do, but obviously spending time with his family is probably what he's doing.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I was surprised, like, because like you said, normally, I mean, there is occasions, but most of the time when Toronto does a ceremony, they don't necessarily go all in on it. So there's been a lot of blunders and just kind of ceremonies to me that have fallen flat, but this time they did it right and created that moment for him. Like, he was crying, Daryl Sittler was crying, players on the ice were crying, Tiger Williams, yeah. So they upped their game a bit to dedicate to him as the greatest Toronto Maple Leafs defenseman of all time. And then when the game started, Toronto honored him again by having an all-Swedish lineup with Nylander, Engvall, Yarncroke, Liljegren, Sandin, and Schalgren. all on the ice when the puck was dropped. So I thought that was a cool touch too.
And let's talk about that one for a second, because well, I'll keep referring back to that audio that we had, but last week when we talked about this, we talked about how everything had to go right for Shogren to be in net that night. You know,
yes.
Toronto wouldn't have been able to afford that under the cap if Murray and Muzzin were there. I mean, obviously Muzzin's not, and so Samsonov got injured as well, but even with just Murray, one of the two Murray and Muzzin, they probably wouldn't able to been able to have them, or both of them, sorry, have him be the starting goalie that night. So kind of special, also kind of special that he started the back-to-back on both weekends being a Swedish goalie, honoring, as we know, Boris Salman, who is Swedish, so that's kind of nice little touch.
And the Swedish heavy induction class with Alfredson, yeah, and the Sedin brothers.
And, I mean, besides Detroit, Vancouver's had probably the second or potentially first biggest Swedish, like, history, you know what I mean? Like, they have the Sedin twins, Naslin, what's his name, Matthias Olman, or Olin. I think he's
Sammy Salo. Yeah, no, I'm pretty sure he was Swedish.
Yeah, they've had then, like, obviously a bigger Swedish heritage, and then obviously now with Ekman Larson and Pettersson and whomever. So it just kind of all had to go right, you know, to see that. The only nicer thing would have been was if Nick Lidstrom still played for Detroit.
I mean, yeah, like, there was some stuff that had to go right, but, like, based on the diagnosis in the summer and Toronto wanting to honor him, they could have kind of asked the NHL to set it up that way.
You're probably right. Like, there probably was
a game that specific weekend so that they could honor Borya at the same time as.
And it made sense that happened because the Hockey Hall of Fame, right?
Yeah.
So probably, yeah, some communication at the league to see, but it's just kind of nice to see that everything was well done. Obviously, the Friday night was also Remembrance Day in Canada, or Veterans Day in the States, or whatever it's called around the world, and they did it right in all facets. That old man who was a veteran, remember, waving so happy.
Oh, yeah.
Like, just everything had to... Everything that they had to do had to be bang on, because obviously it was special on all accounts. So good job, Toronto. And I don't even know if it's our condolences or whatever you want to say to the family.
Yeah. Hopefully he gets to stick around a little bit longer so that he could have those moments with his family.
Yeah. Anyways, yeah, so Boris Salming's, we love you, Boris Salming. All of Leafs Nation play, that thing that I played at the beginning will be played as the outro music as well for this episode. You also probably see a couple pictures of Boris Salming on the YouTube channel. And yeah, as I said, we're back with Kyle and Scott. So Kyle's going to be here with his betting segment that he's queuing up. And Scott's going to be here as well to discuss and break down all of the big things that have happened to the Toronto Maple Leafs. So let's get into those, because we have only, 45 minutes to game time. Matt Murray returns. He returned against his former foe, Pittsburgh. First time he's faced them since being traded. And he doesn't disappoint, I don't think. I don't think he's disappointed any of the three games. Kyle, you want to take it, or Scott, talk about your opinion?
Yeah, sure. I'll start it off. Yeah, I mean, he's just been standing on his head since he's got back from his injury. I'm sure none of us really expected that. But yeah, the teams he's faced have been, it's not like they've been easy opponents either. Like you said, Pittsburgh, twice, was it?
Yeah, it was twice, and I think New Jersey once.
Yeah, like New Jersey, that New Jersey team is unreal. So even though he took the loss that game, I think he had like 35 shots against and like 32 saves or something like that.
I think he's had like north of like an 80, 88, 90 save percentage in all the games. And it was Buffalo. Pittsburgh, New Jersey, Buffalo he's played.
Okay. Even even Saturday he was pretty good. Like I know all of us are gonna downgrade Buffalo a little bit, but he's still like, again, I think it was like 34 shots we put against him. So yeah, he's definitely been kind of back to normal. With regards to like old Matt Murray, like not Ottawa Matt Murray, but like Stanley Cup winning Matt Murray. Like if he keeps playing like this, I think they'll just roll with him and he'll get more playing time than Sammy will.
It's a good problem to have.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong.
Injuries is something that we've always had for goalies, dating back like since Freddie Anderson. But I mean, like we haven't really had two steady goalies that can bang off three games in a row. And I mean, although they lost New Jersey, they still played well. I think, like he played well, especially in all those games. So, and he was making saves. Remember that Jack Hughes save when he like lost a stick?
Yeah, that was crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, like an open end, he stopped with like the palm of his blocker. Like the fact that he came back from an adductor injury, which he's had every time he's got injured, it's basically just been a spiral effect and then just kind of whoops the behind of all these players that are trying the deeks or large cross creases, and he's just getting across. It's kind of nice. Obviously, that's a smart strategy for the other team, but it's kind of nice to see that he hasn't gone down with any injuries. It's also nice to see sticking with the goaltenders. As Kyle mentioned, Samsonov is coming back. It's nice to see that he doesn't require a whole reconstructive surgery on his knee after popping it against Brad Marchand. But, I mean, again, I've never seen a goalie get deked down so bad. Yeah. That was pretty brutal. But, yeah, Scott, you added to the doc. You heard that he's going to be out for the next four games?
Yeah. It was a couple people on Twitter, I saw reporters that said the team said that he's expected to be returning soon, but they don't expect him to be playing this week. It'll be next week, so he's going to miss the next four games. He is traveling with the team, but they don't expect him to play in any of the next four games.
So kind of nice that sucks for Shalgren. It also sucks for Keith Petruzzelli because Joseph Wall's back. And I think Dryden McKay is also playing well. So I'm assuming that Shalgren will probably take the bump to the AHL eventually. If I was Toronto, I'd keep him out for a little bit just in case there's another injury. But
yeah, you have to.
Kind of.
Well, I guess it depends on what's happening with the other players on the team, right? Like when Brody comes back, if Muzzin returns at some point, like there's not going to be enough roster spots for you to have three goalies.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, like, after Samsonov comes back, if he comes back next week, at least for the next week after he comes back, to keep Shalgren, because, like, it'd suck if Samsonov got injured again after the first practice, you know what I mean? Yeah. Just to have an extra backup. But let's get into that. So Muzzin's injury update is that he's got a cervical spine injury, and he's out indefinitely. He's seen a doctor in L.A., I believe, in February or January. So, obviously, we'll get a more, narrowed down timeline of how long he's going to be out. It could be ever. Like, it could be, this could be the end of his career.
Yeah, which especially sucks for based Toronto. On that, especially based on that tweet that Mitch Marner sent out. It seemed like it's more severe than
originally. Yeah, and who was it? David Pagetta or someone on Twitter, remember? Nick Alberga. He talked to Edge, the WWE wrestler, and they had the same injury, and Edge had to retire.
Yeah, but they're
so
not that it's a drastic difference, but because we watched wrestling at the time, I think it was like 2010, 2011. There has been other wrestlers who have had that same injury, like Daniel Bryan and the girl from England. I can't remember her name. And they, Daniel Bryan was only out for a couple of years. Not that, like, Jake Muzzin obviously is older, so it's, and in hockey, it's like if you come back when you're 36, that's a big difference. But, like, apparently, not science behind it, but like the medical knowledge behind it has grown since Edge got his injury, so that the surgeries or the the wait time or the healing of the actual injury doesn't take as long as it did for Edge. And there's more of a like a happiness towards them potentially coming back, or like they won't be on as long, like as opposed to when Edge had it.
Because
I think Daniel Bryan was only out, from what I read anyway, he was only out like 2 years, and then that Paige girl also had a serious neck injury like that, and she was only out for a couple years too, and now she's back. So, but I mean, obviously, like I said, Jake Muzzin's already what, 35. So the 2-3 years that he's going to miss are going to be huge for his career, because that'll be retirement age when he comes back. So if he comes back.
That's why I just get this vibe that if it's a serious injury, I feel like that's just it. Like he might spend, what's his contract over next year? I feel like he might spend the next year on Roby Island. Maybe he'll retire.
Yeah.
It would be nice if Toronto could keep him on Roby Island and then use that cap space rather than have to.
Cap space.
I mean, they still get the cap space regardless. Yeah, but you get to use more cap space if they get to keep him, right?
Yeah.
Like you can use the LTIR, so it's kind of nice. But I guess we'll get more updates on that. It doesn't seem to be promising. In that meantime, though, we also have more cap space to use. We can carry more players, potentially add a little bit more at the deadline, depending on the cap situation. And then coinciding with that, we have TJ Brody, who was also the next man up when Jake Muzzin went down as the most reliable. He's got an oblique injury similar to John Tavares had at the beginning of the year, except he's not progressing well. It was supposed to be 2 weeks. He's not traveling with the team, and rumor has it from the coaches he's not progressing well, and it might be on a little bit longer. Which, I mean,
I don't even remember when that happened.
I don't know, because he played that whole game.
Yeah, how? I don't remember seeing it. Like all that, All I remember hearing is Brody scratch one game, and I'm like, are you kidding me? I thought it was just like out of like no reason. It was going through that like stage where they were changing up lines and all that, and I was like, they're really gonna scratch TJ Brody, and then later to find out that it's injury related.
Yeah. Like there isn't even a moment in the game I can remember where he showed himself being in pain. Like, he just played the whole game like he normally does, and yeah, like Kyle said, it was just that game they announced that he's out. Everybody was freaking out thinking he was just a healthy scratch.
Yeah, I feel like that was definitely a commonality in all of Leafs Nation to see, thinking that he could potentially be a healthy scratch and be like, what the hell? Why aren't you scratching Justin Hall as defense partner?
Yeah.
But, with him out, I mean, it doesn't really change much unless there's some kind of longer term couple months that he could be out. Then obviously Toronto can use his cap space as well, but I would imagine that he'll be back shortly. But in the meantime,
even with him out, though. Sorry.
Pardon? No, go.
Even with him out, like Jordy Benn hasn't played like perfect by any means. He's made a couple mistakes here and there, but I thought he's came into lineup and played pretty solid as coming off an injury and his first time playing like with the players on the team. He doesn't really have any chemistry with anybody. But I thought he's played pretty well since he's slotted in when Brody went down.
That's what I was going to say to you was, or that's what I was going to say in general was, in the meantime, we got Jordy Benn, who seems to be playing a little bit more like Jamie Benn. Like, he scored a goal. He's rushed the puck up the ice. Obviously, he's got that physical edge. Like, that one hit on, Jack Hughes. Yeah. And then he got called up for a penalty. But then after, he looked around, like, I think he thought someone was going to come to Jack Hughes' aid and try and fight him. Obviously not, but
I don't think there's anybody on New Jersey that would have fought him.
Jesper Bratt's gonna go up to him and just fight him.
yeah, I don't think maybe Dawson Mercer. Apparently he's not tough like pound for pound, but he's apparently like a tough guy. So maybe
they got some tough guys. They got like Miles Wood and like Bastion, but I guess they weren't on the ice at the time.
Yeah, and they also have Ryan Graves, who's like not. I mean, I don't imagine those guys are all Jordy Benn level tough. I feel like Jordy Benn and Jamie Benn are kind of like a different breed in that sense. But I mean, yeah, I guess technically one of them could dig in a run at him.
Yeah, then we would have Argue and Mitch Marner go after them.
I'm kind of indifferent about this week. Like, obviously things haven't really pushed the needle either way. Toronto's looking better. Their top scorers are, I think, all have around 20 points now, like the top four, which is nice. But it's like, you beat the teams you expected them to beat. Obviously, New Jersey's kind of a rare 10-game winning streak, 11-game winning streak. Like, that's kind of not something you see all the time. But, like, just based on how the teams are playing and their trajectory, Toronto beat the teams that they should have beat in Pittsburgh and Buffalo, which is nice to see because, obviously, at the start, they weren't beating those teams that they should have beaten. So, we got New Jersey again on Wednesday, and I think New Jersey doesn't play again until Wednesday after beating Ottawa. So I think they're looking for, what, 13 in a row?
New Jersey's on tonight. Sorry to interrupt you, Spencer.
Oh, they are? Who are they playing tonight?
They're home to Edmonton. It'll be
tonight. Yeah. Actually, I remember that because remember, Scott, last week we were talking about how Edmonton could be the toughest test besides Toronto?
I think they could beat them.
I hope they don't. I hope Toronto beats them. I hope they win again, and then Toronto just comes on and whoops ass because, I mean, I don't even – was Toronto winning in that game or was Toronto losing? I forget.
The New Jersey game?
Yeah. I know they lost in overtime, but
– we were down.
We were down and came back?
Nylander scored late.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I remember. Yeah. That's the game that it seemed like they gave up in.
Yeah.
In the third period, yeah.
I think we were winning 1-0, though, weren't we? And then they scored two, and then Nylander scored to tie late.
Matthews scored in the first. Yeah,
and on the power play.
And then they scored like 15 seconds later.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So hopefully that doesn't happen again, because that happened. I mean, it didn't happen necessarily 15 seconds later, but against Pittsburgh, the same situation happened where Toronto was winning, and then in the second period they scored, and then like Pittsburgh scored two goals in like a minute and a half. But they have the Islanders tonight. Matt Barzal got his first goal. He's got like 20 assists, one goal. Not too much of a challenge, I don't think. Like, obviously, the Islanders play that harder trap style, forecheck hard, finish every check. But it's like, I think that Toronto's more skilled than them. What do you guys think? Who you got tonight?
They do have some underrated players, I will say that. Like, Brock Nelson.
Yeah, he's got like 19 points.
Yeah, he's averaging like a point a game right now. And Anders Lee, he's always been good. Just kind of reminds me of like a more physical JVR.
Yeah.
Just a big body. And then I think Noah Dobson's been pretty good this year. So I think it'll be a tough night for the Leafs. Like I don't think it's gonna be easy like the other night against Buffalo. I could see it being a one goal game.
Well, like, that's what I mean, though. Like, Islanders do play a tougher style of hockey, but I just think, like, if it was a pound-for-pound skill game, I have Toronto winning that one. But, yeah, you're right. Like, Brock Nelson, I think he's got, what, 19, 20 points, 11 goals or something like that? Like, he's obviously playing really well. And then Sorokin, I think Sorokin's getting the start tonight, so he's fairly decent. We'll see how that one plays out. Sjogren's getting the start for Toronto. Matt Murray played three in a row, Sjogren. So I like that one. I like going with Sjogren tonight and then Matt Murray on Wednesday against the Devils.
You know what I miss? Is like, I don't know why they stopped doing it or if I just haven't really been paying attention, but I remember growing up watching like the pregame shows or just even like commercials leading up to when the day of the game was coming on. And they used to have like hype packages for like a big game, or like if it was two superstar players, they would be like Matthews versus Crosby, or at the time it was like Yzerman versus whoever, Recchi, whatever. Or like Toronto, Ottawa, they used to do like a whole hype package before the game of like past history or like stuff that have happened that could come back in the games. And like these last two games against Buffalo and the Islanders, like they've done nothing. Like last game against Buffalo, they only mentioned the Dahlin incident like once in the second period, and that was it. They haven't mentioned the John Tavares Islanders thing at all that I've heard going into this game. And you think like that they used to do that all the time. I don't know why they stopped. It would draw so much more attention to the games if you built up the past histories of the teams of like recent events and stuff.
Yeah, market like yeah. I guess games in that sense.
Like I didn't know Toronto was playing the Islanders today, and then when I found out, I was looking on Twitter and like nobody was mentioning the past 5 years of Toronto Islanders history of Tavares coming and Pajama Boy, and like, even when the first season Tavares came, like that's all they ever talked about. It would hype up the games; you were excited to watch them. But then it just seems like they don't do that anymore.
Yeah, I definitely thought that there would have been more of a hype over the Dylan Cousins situation.
Yeah. Like they might have mentioned it more than once, but I only remember them. It was once in the second period when Darlene hit Matthews and Matthews fell over, and then that was the only time I remember them mentioning it. I don't remember them mentioning it going into the game and the pregame show, even to start the game. You think they would have, like when they introduced the teams and Chris Cuthbert and Craig Simpson.
Yeah.
The only time I remember them mentioning it is that second period moment, which sucks because that could have been a huge drawing point for that game. I mean, yeah. It's a game in November, so I guess no one really cares. But still, like if you want viewers to watch, then they have to build up those storylines. But they haven't. I don't remember them doing it. Even the last couple of years, I've seen a decrease in it happening.
Yeah, I was definitely shocked when like. I was watching a little bit at the hockey game I was at, like just on some guy's iPad, and after the Dylan Cousins thing, like you thought that it would have been more, like that was even a chance for the announcers to kind of get more hyped about it, you know?
Yeah,
and obviously, yeah. They shifted against each other, and then
yeah, like I know like the fighting brawling aspect of hockey's decreasing, but you could still draw attention to the games without having to hype it up as a brawl fest.
Yeah, it's true.
Like, obviously, people go there in hopes that there'd be a fight or whatever, a big hit, physical action, whatever. But like, in that instance, obviously, Matthews and Dahlin weren't going to drop the gloves, so you still could have hyped up the two teams playing each other as, like, the rematch of Matthews cross-checking them. Like, what's Dahlin? How's Dahlin going to answer? Is he just going to play his game, or is he going to try to get him back or whatever? But they never did any of that.
Yeah. I'm surprised even like, I mean the hype package against New Jersey probably wouldn't have been the best thing, but just like even to introduce it as New Jersey's holding a 9 or 10 game winning streak, Toronto looks to snap it. Like, you know what I mean? Get people entertained. Cause
yeah,
you're right. It just doesn't seem
like even the
hype packages that they have is just basically, ooh, watch hockey on Sportsnet. There's no individual.
They show the players walking into their stadium and like, oh, there's Austin Matthews. People are going to come watch him. Like, that's not a hype package.
Yeah.
Even the outfit. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Even the game against Vancouver, I think there was one point where they said, like, Vancouver hasn't beat Toronto in Toronto in, like, 5 or 6 years or something like that. Like, that could have been a whole selling point to hype up that game, besides the Boris Salming ceremony and all that, which happened at the beginning. But, like, and they just casually mentioned it in the second or third period. Like, that's a big stat. If Toronto, if it's true, I don't remember the exact number, but I think it was like, yeah, Vancouver hasn't won in Toronto in, like, 5 years. And then they just casually mentioned it like it's an everyday stat that they're just throwing out to because people are bored of watching the game on TV. Like that could have been a huge selling point of drawing attention to the game.
Yeah. That even reminds me of like the New Jersey game, I think. New Jersey or Pittsburgh game when Matthews scored and then they said he's the most point getter or whatever they said.
Oh, the most goals at Scotiabank?
Yeah, it's like that's it. You didn't specify yeah. If I'm at ACC or just Scotiabank because it only switched 2 years ago, 3 years ago. You just said the point and then just moved on.
They just threw it down as a casual, oh, here's a fun fact, and then we're going to move on real quick. When like that's also a huge moment that he's only been in the league for 6 years and he's already the most goals in Scotiabank ever.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It just seems as though they're trying to market their own companies. Like, they're trying to market watching Sportsnet, watching TSN Hockey, watching the Monday Night Hockey versus the what's different than the Tuesday Night Hockey, because they have that added whatever it is room. You know what I mean? Like, it's all about the actual where you watch it rather than what you're watching.
Yeah, so, or their streaming apps or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, like, and it does happen. Sorry, Kyle. Like, if there's, like, a big, like, the Anaheim, Arizona, and then the next time they played, they hyped it up a bit. But, like, when we were growing up, like, the Matt Sundin, Darcy Tucker era, even, like, into the Phil Kessel era, like, it was, like, every other game. There was a hype package of Toronto playing teams of the stuff they did last season or the stuff that happened 2 years ago. And they were, like, trying to draw interest into the games. And I just found it weird that they don't do that anymore.
Yeah, it is kind of strange. Bad opportunity, as Colin mentioned, like, for marketing.
Kind of off topic, but I just have my TV on mute, just watching the pregame or glancing over at it every once in a while. And you guys know that Keith Yandle is now at the desk with Sportsnet?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah, I think he's been there a couple weeks.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I mean, he doesn't do it all the time, but yeah, I think I saw him there a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, he was there. He started after he retired there. The other thing I wanted to bring up quickly before going to the ad read and Kyle's betting segment is, you guys noticed that on Sportsnet and TSN, for those who are in Canada or America and watch on our stream platforms, but did you notice that they try and market, like, Monday Night Hockey, and it's like that the new quote-unquote building with all the, like, interactive stuff, and then it's like Wednesday Night Hockey, and then you've got, like, Friday Night Hockey, and you've got Hockey Night in Canada, and it's just like the only thing that's different really is just the people who are involved. It's like, no offense, I'm just, no disrespect, but it's like, I don't watch Sportsnet to watch a Leafs game to listen to Keith Yandle, to be honest. I like hearing sure, but it's like, I like Elliot Freeman on my freaking TV every night that I watch a Leafs game on Sportsnet so he can bring up any trades, any talks, any, because usually when they're saying, like, oh, what Leaf or what percentage do you have Jacob Chychrun coming to the Leafs, it's like 55, 65, 0, or 100. And then you got Anthony Stewart that's like, I'm going to say 55%, you know what I mean? And then LA Firmish is like, I'm going to say like 20%, because I don't see that happening ever, and then it never comes to be because he's actually got the inside track.
Yeah,
it's like, that's the stuff I like. Same as Darren Dreger on TSN. Like, I don't want to hear Dave Poulin's opinion. I want to hear I don't care that he played in the NHL. I want to hear Darren Dreger. I want to hear, I know Bob McKenzie's almost retired, but I want to hear Chris Johnson. I want to hear Pierre LeBrun. You know, I don't want to hear, and then them talk about, like, what they think is happening, because they've got the inside track on what's happening, like, with the players.
Yeah. Which I think, and as much as I hate Don Cherry, I feel like at the time Don Cherry was on TV, is like, they did that right. Like, the only, like, night of hockey that was really pushed was Saturday night, Hockey Night in Canada. Like, you could have a Monday game, you could have a Wednesday game, whatever, and, like, they showed commercials for it or whatever, maybe a hype package. But, like, Hockey Night in Canada, Saturday night, they hyped that to no end because it was must-see TV. It was, you had to be there to see what Don Cherry said, to see what Ron McLean said, to see what was happening, who Toronto was playing. And it just seems like they do that with every game now. Yeah. And then so the Dave Poulins, not that I have anything against these guys, Dave Poulin, Kevin Bieksa, Jennifer Botterill, Jeff O'Neill's, they're on TV 5-6 times a week giving their opinions on stupid questions that don't really matter because every game is hyped just as much as every game now. But for their programming blocks anyway.
Exactly. And it's like, I mean, I get it. They obviously don't want to do it every night and blah, blah, blah. But it's like, I remember years ago, as you'd mentioned, like, insider trading was on the actual TV. You know what I mean? It was in the intermission. And then you have like the 32 Thoughts podcast with Elliot Freeman. Like that premise was the hot stove on Saturday nights. And then they did it sometimes during the week where they're like the second intermission. Now the regular is the quiz or the burning questions, which is the same thing, just a different name. Yeah. And they both say it's Canada's favorite game show. And then the second intermission is them just breaking it down and talking about the game. And it's like you don't have any kind of rumors, which people love. Everyone loves rumors. You write an article on Toronto potentially trading William Nylander, you're going to get 2,700 viewers or readers minimum. You know what I mean? Like people love that kind of stuff. Like people want to know who's in for who, what's going on, what players are happy, what players aren't happy, what players want to be traded, what players are thinking about going somewhere else. What players have Ottawa on their no trade list? Like, come on, people love those things, and you're not engaging the right audience. I don't think.
Yeah,
like you're engaging what audience
behind. Sorry. Behind the scenes stuff that you normally wouldn't hear, that like the average casual fan wouldn't be able to partake in or even be involved in, and then the people come on TV and tell you it because that's what they're hearing, and it draws
interest.
I don't want to hear Dave Poulin give his biased opinions because he doesn't like Toronto.
Yeah, because they fired his ass.
Or Kevin Bieksa with his stupid points he made the other day about the net coming off. I agree.
Okay, we got to get a word from DraftKings. We also got to get Kyle's betting segment. We already talked a little bit about Shalgren. We're going to get in a little bit of Nick Robertson when we come back, as well as some rumors that we've heard. Not personally, no one's told us, just that we've heard and seen. And we've already kind of talked about the Leafs turnaround, so we'll go into the week ahead. We got about 25 minutes before the Leafs game, so we're going to close this thing off shortly. So, Kyle, get ready. We're going to get a word from our show sponsor and then send it over to you.
Hockey fans, light the lamp this winter with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL. New customers can bet just $5 pregame money lines on any NHL team to win their game and get $150 in free bets if they do. If that wasn't enough excitement, you can turn small bets into even bigger payouts with same-game parlays. Combine multi-bets, like which team will win, how many goals will be scored, and more for your shot to win even bigger payouts. So download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code THPN. Bet $5 on any NHL team to win and get $150 in free bets if they do. Only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Promo code THPN. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See notes for details.
We have Mr. Kyle to do the one, the only betting segment. I'm going to throw in a little deep thinking music, and you're gonna break down three or four games that you feel could win the listeners some cash. You're ready?
Turns into a smooth jazz radio host.
I like it.
You ready for it?
Of course.
All right, here's some deep thinking by Spenny Laz.
Okay, back again with the betting segment.
Just had the music up too loud.
Yeah. Yelling into the mic.
You're fired.
Anyway, a couple weeks ago, I don't think it was too bad. I think I went 2-for-3. I don't know. Either 2-for-3 or 1-for-3. Whatever. It's a new week. Okay. Easy.
I'm pretty sure he went 2-for-3.
2-for-3. Okay, so I actually did okay. So hopefully I got some people some money. Because Scott, you did give me kudos because you did agree with my picks for once.
Yeah.
And usually you're pretty good with your picks. American Thanksgiving this week. So three games on Thursday we've got, and two of my picks are actually going to be from Thursday. So starting off at 12:30, Buffalo is going to be playing in Detroit against the Lions. Right now I'm seeing the spread at Buffalo by 8.5. I got to roll with the Bills here. Last week they didn't look amazing against the Browns to come out. They looked all right, but then ended up having a really good second half. They won 31-23. They actually played in Detroit due to the snowstorm in Buffalo. So they're just going to be back at the same stadium. I think it's called Ford Field. Yeah, Ford Field. 8.5 spread, the Bills over the Lions. I think the Bills' offense is just way too good. Last week, the Lions came out and upset the Giants huge, 31-18. Giants are a team I don't think are as good as what their record shows. Their schedule hasn't been that tough from what I've seen. And I think that Bills are going to come out and win probably by 10 points. So right now, if you can get the spread at 8.5, I like that for the Bills. My second game, note that one is at 12:30 on Thursday afternoon. So it's an early start on Thursday, November 24th, due to American Thanksgiving. My second game is going to be that same day, but at 8:20 p.m., I'm going to take the Vikings by 3 points over the Patriots. Vikings had an embarrassing loss this week at home against Dallas. 40-3 they lost at home. Would you believe that? But I think the Vikings are going to turn it around, especially after that embarrassing loss. I'm sure their coach has been making them work hard after that. Patriots, they're not a bad team either, but I like the spread of 3. It's not a lot, and Vikings at home, like I said, I think they're going to turn it around. I think they should cover that 3. And my final pick, again, I'm going to go with a point spread cover because I didn't want to just do money line this week due to the fact that, I don't know, it's easy to say Bills money line, but there's no money in betting on the Bills for money line. So I'm going to go with Seattle Seahawks over the Raiders, cover 4 points. This is at Sunday, November 27th. This is taking place Sunday, November 27th at 4:05. Seahawks haven't been a bad team. They've kind of surprised everyone with Russell Wilson being gone. Didn't really expect them to be in the hunt for a playoff spot. 6-4 record so far. Geno Smith's looked not terrible. He's been above what they thought he'd be getting. 17 touchdowns and 4 interceptions. That's pretty good for Geno Smith, a guy that they thought was not going to live up to expectations of Russell Wilson. Obviously, he obviously isn't Russell Wilson, but 17 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. And they're going up against a 3-7 Raiders squad. I know I'm looking at records right now, but even just watching the Raiders play, yes, they did beat the Broncos in overtime this week, 22-16. But I think Seattle's going to live off the crowd. And who did Seattle? Seattle had a bye week last week. So I guess it's this week still because there's a game going on tonight. But anyways, they're going to be well rested, and I think they're going to be able to cover that spread of 4. So those are my picks for the week. Make sure to get your bets in earlier. Like I said, American Thanksgiving this week. So that one game I told you about was at 12:30. And then there's also a game at 4:30 that day and 8:20. Don't miss those NFL games Thursday because they're all going to be pretty good. We've got an action-packed week of NFL, I think. So, yeah, get your picks in, and hope you guys win some money.
All right, Kyle, that is a Thursday betting betting slip, right? Because I'm going to listen back to this podcast, write down everything you said, put my money on those games, and then if I win, I'll give you the this sound at the start of next podcast.
If not, I will give you this sound.
I don't mind. I'll be laughing. Why?
Because I'll be laughing at you.
Shouldn't we be laughing at you? Because you're the one who lost the money.
That's it. All right, so there you have it. Oh, gosh, sorry. Got this thing. got this thing on loop. All right, so Kyle's Bang segment is brought to you by DraftKings. Promo code THPN. Right now you can boost all your bets with DraftKings same game parlays. So make sure you this thing's still playing in the background. All right, soundboard's on a little bit of technical difficulty, so I apologize for that. All right, so anyways, some news and notes around the league, or around Toronto again. Nick Robertson has lack of playing time. They haven't sent him down. He's sitting out for a fifth straight game. The coach doesn't want to talk about it anymore. Sheldon Keefe sent this guy down. You're ruining his development. And then I'm just going to throw out the other two things quick, and then we'll get to the week ahead just before I wrap it up. Toronto has interest in Frank Vatreno and Connor, from Anaheim, and Connor Timmins from Arizona. Only issue with Frank Vatreno is he's $3.5 million per year. Half of that, Toronto still probably won't be able to fit in their cap in a perfect world. What are you guys' thoughts? Who should they go for out of those two? Depth forward, extra scoring depth on extra scoring depth on forward, extra defense depth. And what's your thoughts on Nick Robertson?
Well, I like the Vatreno potential trade. But my only thing is, do they expect him to come in play in a top six role? Because from what I've heard, they might think that.
Probably. It's the Leafs.
But, like, is he really the answer for a top six role?
No, like, but Toronto's all about those bargain contracts.
Yeah, 3.65 over the next 3 years. So he does. Oh, so
he'll be like 1.8.
Yeah. So they'll have
But it's only. That's not bad then, really. 1.8 for 3 years.
Yeah, that wouldn't be bad at all. He's 28, so I'd like him for sure if that is retained, because obviously we need that to happen. But I don't really know much about Connor Timmins.
I think he's like if I'm not mistaken, I could be wrong, but I think he's like a poor man's Ilya Labushkin. But as you mentioned before we started this, he has the Sault Ste. Marie connection.
We did see that.
Apparently he played alongside what's his face there? Rasmus Sandin. So he's only 24. Just trying to look here. He only played.
Was he drafted by Colorado originally?
Yeah, first round, yeah.
Okay. I think I remember him from the World Juniors.
Yeah, he could be a little bit better than Frankfurt Ilya Labushkin, but like offensively, he's only got a total of 7 points in his NHL career. But he's only played 41 games, so in that one season where he played 31 games, he has 7 points. He had 22 blocks and 18 hits. So I assume that he plays some more defensive style. Scott, what do you think?
If I had to choose one, I'd probably go Vatreno. Mostly just because on defense we still have Brody coming back. Plus we have Mete kind of floating out there waiting to get another chance to come back into the lineup. So we don't really need as much as like he is a physical defenseman, but the stat you just read, I don't really think we need more defense because we have a couple in the minors who could come up and play bottom pair minutes, plus the Brody and Mete still on the fringes. Brody with injury, Mete just waiting to get back in the lineup. So I think the extra forward or bumping someone out of the lineup in the case of Vetrano, if he is a top six guy, I think that would be better suited for us.
We also have Adam Gaudet, though. I mean, not that he's a Frank Vetrano. Frank Vetrano's got a lethal shot. But it's like, at the same time, it's like, we also have Adam Gaudet, who's doing well in the minor leagues. Also, just quickly, I don't understand why Anaheim signed him to a three-year deal worth. Did they sign him, or did they trade for him?
They signed him.
So they signed him for a three-year deal and are going to trade him after the first year?
He was on the Rangers last year.
Yeah,
but they still signed him this year for 3 years?
No, they did.
Not that it, like, I mean, the three-year, the length thing doesn't really make sense, but in the end, it could be a good thing, because if he has, I don't know how he's doing so far, but if he picks it up as and they move him for prospects or pieces or a draft pick, it'll look like a smart move from the GM's point of view.
Yeah, that's true.
6 points.
In 18 maybe
games. 6 points in 18 games.
Yeah, six points in 18 games, four goals.
That's not that bad. If you see a world,
especially on Anna,
pitches Nick Robertson and tries to get a Frank Vetrano retention and a John Klingberg retention.
No, if Toronto's trading anybody, it's William Nylander. Come on.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I don't want them to trade Robertson.
Yeah, they're like, probably Robertson to play. Savvy.
Yeah, savvy. I want Robertson to play, but for some reason he, which is funny because before this one time where Sheldon Keyes doesn't want to talk anymore, it was like he needs to work on his development and he needs to work on the aspects of the games where he's lagging behind, yada yada yada. But then there's players in the lineup now who don't play a full 300-foot game. Like, there's some players who are better at offense than defense. Some players who are better at defense than offense. Some players who, as of this point, playing this season, aren't really good at either. Yet they're still in the lineup. So what, like, how much longer can you use that excuse for Nick Robertson when there's players who are playing like crap that are given chance after chance after chance?
Yeah. I don't know. It's confusing because, and scary because I don't want this to happen to Matthew Nyes when he comes to Toronto. Because if it happens, I'm going to be pissed.
Well, look,
like I put on Twitter today, every good prospect Toronto's had gets screwed out of their development. Lilligren's the only one right now in the current prospect pool that they had that's actually developing, and that's because he went through the whole motion of changing his, like, he changed everything. He was supposed to be an offensive power play leader, and now he's an offensive style block shots penalty kill guy. And that's because Toronto asked him to do that, and he was able to do it. But Rasmus Sandin, like, I think he'd strive for his goals in his development better than if he was playing in a top four role, maybe an extra 4 or 5 minutes a night, rather than playing 11 or 10 and getting ripped apart because he makes one mistake. And she's, I don't know, it's everyone, every good prospect that we've had gets screwed out of their development because of coach. And I think the issue with Rasmus or Sheldon Keefe is because he's deep down jealous.
Of Sandin? Or just of young players in general?
Of young players, because he I think by like 26 his career was over. So yeah. It's like maybe he's jealous. Maybe he's trying to do the same things his coach did to him. Like, I don't know, but it just seems very irresponsible on the Leafs' part to allow a coach and a GM to, as a management or an ownership group, to allow your coach and GM to basically ruin a player's development. Like, send this guy down. It's almost as bad as the Shane Wright situation.
Yeah.
That's brutal.
Two things, and then if Kyle wants to make his point, he can. The worry about the prospects is a good point, because look at Nick Abruzzese, as everybody but Gordon Miller says. Last year when he came, like, there was so much hype around him. Like, he was almost hyped as much as Matthew Nyes coming into the lineup. And then once he started playing, it just kind of fell off, and now he's in the minors, and no one even talks about him potentially being called up or giving a chance.
Yeah, and he's playing, like,
last line minutes. And two is, at this point in time, like, yeah, everybody needs defensive forwards, but, like, Toronto's defense has 4 goals all year so far. Like, I think they're one of the worst teams in the league, even last year, for defense scoring. why, when you have two young prospects coming up that are offensive-minded defensemen, do you then force them to change their style of play into defensive-minded when really the only offensive defenseman we had at that point was Morgan Rielly? Like, TJ Brodie doesn't get a lot of points. Jake Muzzin doesn't really get a lot of points. Labushkin didn't get a lot of points. Justin Hall is a plug. You should get rid of him. Who gets not a lot of points. So why then, when we have two guys who are coming into the lineup that can be those offensive-minded guys and then build around them with defensive-focused defensemen, do you then force them to change in defensive-focused forward or defensemen? And now the only really guy we have that puts up points, and he hasn't really been doing it, is Morgan Rielly.
And Jordy Benn.
Jordy Benn, yeah.
I think that's probably because Toronto's used their defensive-minded players, defensive-minded forwards, et cetera, in Ursula defensemen in a role where they shouldn't be. Like Muzzin, he shouldn't have been playing an offensive-style role. He shouldn't have been realistically. I think they should have put Sandin on the top four all this time and put Muzzin in the bottom pairing. You could still share their roles, but it's like I feel like Sheldon Keith's a little bit ass backwards in that.
So then any logical person would have realized, like, Jake Muzzin's more defensive. Let's switch the roles around. Put Sandin or Liljegren, give them some development in an offensive-focused situation. And then we can play Muzzin in his strong suit of playing defense. But it just seemed like they didn't do that and said, you guys aren't going to play until you turn into Jake Muzzin and only play defense. And Sandin made the switch, Liljegren made the switch, and Sandin really hasn't yet. But shouldn't have really happened. They should have been, we're going to give you situations where you could show off your offensive skills, and then we'll help you adjust to your defensive capabilities by putting you with guys who can play defense.
Yeah. Yeah, Sheldon Keefe doesn't seem that smart, though.
Like, I can't even remember the last time, and you could argue, I guess, Morgan Rielly. But even then, like, besides that one year where he was up for the Norris, he hasn't really been that prolific on offense. He's kind of numerous stupid plays, and he makes whatever. But like the last true offensive defenseman we've had, I guess you have to go all the way back to like Brian McCabe, and that was like 2007 when he left.
Yeah, I would argue that we had this argument before, but I would argue that Thomas Cavalier was also offensive.
Well, yeah, from an assist standpoint, but I'd say like if you're categorizing Thomas Cavalier, I'd feel like people would put him as more a defenseman as opposed to an offensive guy because.
Yeah, I feel like
while he was getting assists, I don't think he was necessarily known as that offensive guy who would control plays.
Yeah, I feel like that's the opposite. Like, I feel the opposite between Brian McCabe and him. I feel like Thomas Cavalier is more offensive, who led the quarterback the power play, started the breakout rushes, and Brian McCabe was more of the defensive two-way player who liked to hit, scored on his own net.
Scored
in
his own net.
Maybe. Like, I always just viewed it as Cavalier was more of the, I guess, two-way, but like his game was more tailored to defense because it was always Brian McCabe and other guys who were shooting and scoring on the power play. Well, like, Cavalier was setting them up and stuff, yeah, but I feel like, I don't know, maybe just me, but I felt like Cavalier was more two-way defensive and McCabe was more...
Yeah, my only argument with that is like Thomas Cavalier is more like a wish version of Scott Niedermeyer, who did the exact same thing and people deemed him offensive. Like he started the breakout quarterback to power play. He just didn't shoot because he had Chris Pronger. So I'm curious to see if it's just me that thinks that or if other people also think like what did you think Scott Niedermeyer is offensive or two-way?
Well, I mean, I think he was two-way. And even then, like, I was going to continue. Like, I wouldn't even consider really Brian McCabe a true offensive, just in that aspect of the team. He was the offensive guy. But, like, I would consider Scott Niedermeyer more two-way than strictly. Like, when I think offensive, I think, like, Paul Coffey, Richard Park, Bobby Orr.
No, and, Brad Park, not Richard Park.
Or, yeah, Brad Park, Richard Park.
Richard Park had, like, three goals.
Yeah, Brad Park. Cale Makar, Eric Karlsson, and then there's the two ways, which is like Chris Pronger, Scott Niedermeyer, who can score and put up offense, but are also good on defense. And then there's the defensive, which is like Scott Niedermeyer or Scott Stevens and them. But like in that situation of the Leafs lineup, I viewed Cavalier as more of the defensive guy on that pairing and McCabe is more of the offensive.
Yeah, it's just interesting that we, like, people, like, the perception you get of like, how they play and stuff, you know what I mean?
Yeah. But, like,
right, okay.
Back to my original point, yeah. it's just weird to me that they don't allow them, or didn't allow them, or didn't want them, I guess, to play to their strengths and then help them adjust to the defensive aspect, as opposed to kind of forcing them into that defensive role and then having them worry about adjusting to the now offensive-minded situations that they may be put in eventually at some point down the road.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
All right. Kyle, got anything to add?
To your guys' points, not really. Just a little quick scoreboard watch, though. Devils are tied 1-1. I know we talked about their streak. And Leafs game's about to start.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to... So we got the week ahead quickly. We have Wednesday the 23rd of November, New Jersey, Friday the 25th against Minnesota. That is a 2 p.m. start. We got Saturday the 26th, another back-to-back on a weekend versus Pittsburgh. I wouldn't be surprised if you see a Matt Murray start that game because it's Pittsburgh. Monday the 28th against Detroit. That could be the game where we eye a Samsonov return, potentially a Wednesday the 30th. November 30th against San Jose. I believe that's in Toronto again because they're not going on a Western road swing again. You could see Samsonov come back for that one. So watch the 28th, 30th. I wouldn't be surprised if Shogren gets a 2 p.m. start just based on him being more of a minor league goalie, and minor leagues start earlier sometimes. Maybe he might be used to that 2 p.m. start. The next 2 p.m. start or thereabouts will probably be the next gen game in December on like the 23rd. I think it's against Carolina. Typically just before Christmas. We will be back with you next Thursday, the 20... What day are we on?
21st.
We'll be back with you the 1st of December, actually, to bust out the new month, the month of Christmas. Well, for us, month of Hanukkah, month of whatever religion. Anyways, yeah, so we'll be with you December 1st. Back with you, have more ins and outs of all of the stuff around Toronto. You guys got anything quick to add?
No, I'm good.
No? Kyle?
Well, yeah, I'm good.
All right, we're going to listen to one more playing of this Boris Salming from the ceremony. Have a good week. Good luck tonight to the Leafs. Go Leafs, go. Oh, and Boris Salming, this one's for you.
Leafs Nation loves you. One more time, let's hear it for the great Borya Salming.